This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The fight over redistricting is back. This morning, the state of Texas and the U.S. Department of Justice began their arguments over the maps drawn by the Republican-controlled state. Critics of the maps say they're drawn to weaken the voting power of minorities and improve and improperly maximize the number of Republicans elected to the state House and to Congress. Do you think minority voting power is being weakened in Texas with these maps? Should Texas reform how we do redistricting? And what would that reform look like? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. And you can email us at thesource@tpr.org or write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. Our guest this half hour, Henry Flood, is professor of political science at St. Mary's University. He's been called as an expert witness in many disputes over redistricting. And also Michael Lee, redistricting counsel with the Brenham Center, and he writes the must-read blog on this issue, TexasRedistricting.com. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thank you, Dave.
Henry, let me ask you, what's going on? What's being argued in the federal courtroom right now?
Well, depending on which plaintiff is arguing, they all have a different cause to bring forth before the court. I was retained by the Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund to represent the Pettus plaintiffs, and that there's been some the racial intent in the redistricting of certain districts. We argued this in the 2011 redistricting lawsuit. And the courts ruled in our favor that, in fact, Texas had redistricted Hispanics in such a way that they drew some of the congressional districts, some of the House districts, state House districts, in a way that they disenfranchised the Latino voters. They created districts that would not allow Hispanic voters to elect a candidate of their choice.
Michael Lee, let me make a correction. It was TexasRedistricting.org, not .com. We have the Voting Rights Act had been weakened by the Supreme Court. So why are we even talking about this? It thought the Supreme Court said no more.
Well, the Supreme Court said that the system under which some states had to submit election law changes for pre-approval was no longer enforceable because the formula for determining what states were covered was 40 years old and it was out of date. It left intact other provisions of the Voting Rights Act, which deal with when and where you have to create minority opportunity districts, and also bar intentional discrimination, which also is barred by the Constitution. One of the interesting issues that will come up in this case is whether another provision of the Voting Rights Act called Section 3 could be used to bail in Texas, which is a fancy way of saying whether the court could order Texas again to begin submitting its election law changes, including redistricting plans for pre-approval. It could do that if it finds that the maps were intentionally discriminatory.
Yeah, I've heard it described as Section 2 plus Section 3 equals Section 5. Does that work?
Well, I haven't heard that one, but that's pretty good.
Right. So basically, the Voting Rights Act, the Supreme Court, they removed one tooth out of the mouth of the Voting Rights Act, but there's still other teeth that have been used in the past. And so here we are in the federal courthouse in San Antonio trying to figure out how strong those teeth are.
That's right, and the crux of it, I think, is going to be the maps that were passed in 2011, where Texas grew, it gained 4.3 million people between 2000 and 2010, more than any other state. Hispanics made up about 7 out of 10 of the new people in Texas. Non-Anglos made up about 90% of that, and yet when the maps were drawn, out of the four new congressional districts that Texas got, none of them were minority opportunity seats. And the same thing happened on the state House side. You didn't really see new opportunities created despite the fact that there was rapid non-Anglo growth in Texas.
So, Professor Henry Flores, when we talk about the word gerrymandering, people like to throw the word gerrymandering around. Now, Does that, when you say gerrymandering, does that mean something illegal happened, or just funky?
Actually, no and yes. Gerrymandering is kind of the slang term for redistricting, really, to tell you the truth. And funky, it can be funky, but it can be legal at the same time. And what I mean by that is that in order to draw the districts, the people that are doing the redistricting have to follow a whole set of different guidelines. And sometimes those guidelines result in districts looking kind of funky and kind of very strange looking. I think Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson in the 1991 redistricting lawsuit actually described her district as looking like a disease spreading all over the map, you know. Matter of fact, Congressman Joe Barton's district, Republican up in Ennis, Texas, he's got one of the strangest looking districts I've ever seen in my life, and I'm not sure why that one hasn't been looked at very carefully. But gerrymandering is the slang term for redistricting. That's what we do. And it's not necessarily illegal. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court has ruled that it's a political action, that you can politically gerrymander. So that's protected by the law. What you cannot do is gerrymander to the extent that you deny a covered group, I mean a group covered by the Voting Rights Act or the Civil Rights laws. In the United States, it's African-Americans, Latinos, Asians in some parts of the United States, Native Americans in other parts of the United States. You can't gerrymander and deny them the opportunity to elect a candidate of their choice. So that you can't, in other words, you can't intentionally move the census tracts or precincts that they have and put them in a weakened position when you have the opportunity of putting them in a strong position.
Right. So how does that dilute the strength of minority voters? I mean, they're still going to the polls, they're still going to vote, but because they have been put into this one district, that their power can be weakened? How's that?
Well, minority voters, if you look at their historical voting patterns, if you look at Hispanics in the United States, just generally speaking, they have been voting on an average since 1980, as far back as we have data, at about a 65% rate. Some years it's higher, some years it's lower for Democratic Party candidates. And we know that they also tend to vote very much for candidates of unique to their particular regions, people that they're comfortable with. And more often than not, these are Hispanic candidates. They don't necessarily are.
I'm going to cut you off right here. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll talk more about this. We're talking about redistricting in Texas. There is a trial underway today here in San Antonio Federal Courthouse talking about if the current maps are unfair to minority voters. We want to ask you to call in if you got a question or a comment. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about redistricting in Texas and whether or not the maps as we have them today are unfair to minority voters. That's the question that's being argued in a federal courthouse here in San Antonio. Our guest, Henry Flores, professor of political science at St. Mary's University, has also been an expert witness many times in disputes over redistricting. And Michael Lee, he is the redistricting counsel with the Brenham Center, and he writes the blog on this issue, of critical blog, TexasRedistricting.org. When we went to break, Professor Flores, you were talking, the question is, I mean, you still get to vote. You know, you're not being prevented from voting. How does redistricting weaken an individual's ability to choose who they want to go to Congress?
Well, in the case of Hispanics, for instance, as I was explaining, not only do they vote in very like patterns, but they also live in very distinct and unique places. For instance, in San Antonio, Texas, on the south side of San Antonio, you have this huge, densely populated Latino community. Well, if in redistricting, if you chop that community up, what you've gone and done is divide the vote one way or the other. In the 2011 round of the 2011 redistricting trial, one of the things we discovered was the redistrictors chopped up the south side of San Antonio three different ways. A community that historically all had been in one congressional district got chopped up three ways and put in three different congressional districts. What you went and did when you did that was create a situation where all those Latinos in that community lost the ability to have a significant influence on an election, the congressional election that had been representing them all for years. And so that's an example of how you dilute the vote.
Michael Lee, how sophisticated are the people who draw these maps? What tools do they have, and how precise can they be?
It is remarkable how careful and strategic they can be nowadays. You see an example in the Texas case where they actually swapped out in one district, Congressional District 23, which is Pete Gallego's congressional district. They swapped out high voting Hispanic voters and substituted in low voting Hispanic voters from other areas. The district if you looked at the statistics, it looks like it's about as Hispanic and maybe even a little bit more Hispanic than it used to be. But because of the voting patterns, it was much less likely to perform for Hispanics and to enable Hispanics to elect their candidate of choice. And that's just one example of how targeted and strategic they can be. You know, you literally can move lines using the state software. You can move lines and instantly see how the demographics change. And because in Texas there is polarization along racial lines, you can pretty well guess in many cases how those districts will perform.
So when you look at the district lines as they drawn on the map, is it just a straight line, or does it look like a saw blade with all the sharp cuts and ins and outs as they try to, you know, surgically remove a block or so of one neighborhood, because we know there's a lot of voters in that neighborhood? Henry?
Yes, I do. When I first saw the Congressional District 23, I noticed what they went and did was my first observation was that they had cut Maverick County, which is down along the border, in half, going east-west. It had never been cut in half before. It had always been wholly contained in one congressional district. And when I went through there, I magnified Eagle Pass and They zigzagged all the way around there. So I just kept following the line up north to San Antonio and into the south side. That's when I discovered that they had chopped off two-thirds of the south side San Antonio community. And they did it block by block, census block by census block, and then it on and continued all the way west, all the way to El Paso. And you could see the little jigs all around El Paso as well. The district itself, the boundary itself, looks very compact. You get down to the real fine details along city, you know, census blocks, and it looks all jaggedy and so forth. Essentially, they had to remove 149,000 voters from CD23 to bring it into apportionment. But in doing that, they hunted and pecked and manipulated 600,000 voters throughout that entire district in order to get the exact configuration that they wanted.
But that's not improper or illegal. That's what they can do, right, Michael? There's no law saying that a congressional district has to be pretty.
It certainly doesn't have to be pretty, but you can't act with the intent of disadvantaging minority voters. And that's what the accusation is that the state did. In other words, they were very strategic and very targeted in making sure that districts in some ways might look good, but really would not enable people to effectively have a voice, just because, again, Texas has sharply racially polarized voting patterns. Hispanics and African Americans tend to vote disproportionately Democratic. Anglo voters tend to vote disproportionately Republican.
Right. So when you look at those splits, that stratification of voters along racial lines, then as you try to maximize, you know, Republican votes, there's nothing wrong with that. You just happen to be moving, you know, Hispanic voters out of your district.
Well, that's certainly the state's argument is, you know, we were not discriminating against African Americans and Hispanics. We were discriminating against Democrats. The interesting thing the court will have to decide is in a state where there is a close parallel, not an exact parallel, but a close parallel between ethnicity and partisan affiliation, whether that was proper or not.
So the case that's happening right now in federal court in San Antonio, how significant is that? What is on the table?
I think, it could be very significant if not only from, every redistricting cycle is significant in the sense that district lines could change and power could shift. This case is more important, I think, than normal because, again, the plaintiffs in the case, including the Justice Department, are asking the court to put Texas back under federal supervision, in other words, requiring Texas to submit future redistricting plans for advance approval before putting them into effect. That is an important test of this until now little-used provision of the Voting Rights Act, and it will be closely watched by people around the country who are looking for additional tools to enable them to protect the voice of minority voters, not only in Texas but elsewhere.
If the Justice Department wins in San Antonio, will that also be useful in, say, Florida and North Carolina, where they're also having major redistricting battles?
I think it could be useful all around the country, and not only in the traditional states that have a history of discrimination, like Texas and Florida, but also in places like Illinois or wherever. And I think it's going to be an important test. Again, there isn't a lot of law in this area, and the Texas case almost certainly will be heard by the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will get a chance to weigh in on all of these issues.
Okay, let's go to the phones. And phone line number is 210-614-8980. And Dan has called in. Dan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks. I just was wondering if the Voting Rights Act has a private right of action or not, or if the only way to enforce it is through the Justice Department and through other actions like that.
Okay, Dan, great question. Henry Flores, can you give us an answer?
No. As far as I know, if you're a member of a covered group, and protected by the law, a Latino or African-American, an Asian-American, or Native American in certain parts of the United States, you can bring suit. It's not just the Justice Department. This is a
we've seen that with groups.
Yeah, groups, individuals, citizens have brought lawsuits before. As an individual, as a private individual, this you can bring a lawsuit.
If you have standing.
If you have standing, yes.
Okay. Heidi, let's get you. Okay, Michael?
In fact, in these types of cases, it's been rare that it's been the Justice Department. Typically, it has been minority voters who have brought these sorts of cases. The fact that DOJ is here is an indication of how important the Texas case is.
All right. Okay. Let's get another caller on the air. Heidi has called in. Hey, Heidi, you're on the air.
There's a story coming up about possibly some of the districts in Texas segregating, looking at that option again, school districts segregating. And here I'm listening to a story about gerrymandering and reducing the influence of minority in voting for congressional areas. Is there some sort of pattern here, coincidence, to have these two stories, which seems to me to take a backward step on civil rights?
Okay. Heidi, thanks for that question. I don't think our guests can address that because they're not familiar with what the next segment's going to be. But in the next segment, we are going to be talking about 60 years since Brown versus Board of Education and a frontline report that airs this week looking at school districts that try to secede from each other to try and create deal with the resource issues. So, but you can listen in and make your own conclusions on whether or not there is a connection. So, Henry Flores, let me ask you, as this case is being argued in San Antonio, will this have an impact or could it have an impact in the November election?
Well, yes, it could, but I don't think it's going to. We're so close to it. A lot of people don't realize that Labor Day is right around the corner, and Labor Day is the traditional kickoff date for campaigning for the general election. But more importantly, you've already had primaries run under a specific map. And I'm not sure that we're going to redraw a whole map just for the general election. I think what the court's going to do is, if they rule in favor of the plaintiffs, I think the court's just going to say, you know what, have your election, and when the new legislature gets installed, then you're going to have to sit down and relook at all of this. But remember, they're going to rule on these cases. There's four of them here in San Antonio right now. It's actually one case, but it's been divided into four different hearings because it's pretty complex. If Texas loses, or I guess maybe if the plaintiffs lose too, there's going to be an appeal to the Supreme Court, and they're going to have to listen to this case as well. So when the final decision comes down, who knows? But I think they're just going to leave the districts the way they are now for the forthcoming election.
Right. And so, Michael Lee, are people at the Brennan Center, do they see this as significant cases, that this is a lot's hinging on this?
I think, well, you know, every major case that comes out of Texas seems to be significant. You know, Texas, all, you know, ever since Texas became covered under the Voting Rights Act and even before, you know, every redistricting cycle has resulted in litigation, and Texas has always managed to make a law in this area more than most states, which I guess is a great distinction or a dubious distinction how you want to look at it. But certainly because of the possibility that Texas could be required to resubmit to the pre-approval process or pre-clearance process, I think everyone is watching this case very, very carefully.
Right, but as we've seen the maps drawn in Texas, and they've been drawn to favor Republicans because they're drawn by Republicans, and that's the way they got to do it. When the Democrats were in charge, they drew districts to favor them as well. So, what happens when Texas turns blue, and if that ever happens, and suddenly Henry they can draw their own maps? How different would they look?
You know, I quite different probably, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what it's like. You know, in the 1991 round of redistricting, I actually worked for the Texas Republican Party because they sided with Hispanics in a lawsuit.
Okay. It shows you how things change.
Right.
All right. Henry Flores, professor of political science, St. Mary's University. Michael Lee, a redistricting counsel at the Brennan Center. This is The Source on KSTX.